Hi again, everyone. Welcome to the OFCCP Compliance Podcast at Local Job Network. I'm your host, Tim Yuma. This is actually part two of our initial 2020 episode. We just had so much information to cover, we had to make sure to split it into a couple of parts for you. I will once again be joined by President and Founder of HR Analytical Services, Bill Osterndorf, as we have some very important insights that he'll bring us as far as the OFCCP and everything going around at the agency. So stay tuned and hope you enjoy. All right, we're going to jump back toward the idea of what federal contractors and subcontractors need to be doing. And, you know, we're talking about Lean earlier, of course, and one of his key initiatives was getting these focus reviews created and taken care of, ideally. What's the latest chatter, though, when we're talking about the status of the Section 503 focus review specifically? Obviously, near and dear to Lean's heart, but where are we at as far as any conversations that employers have had or any new information or updates that you can provide?
So the Section 503 focus reviews, and just to be clear, because you know we love our acronyms and things. So Section 503 is the Section 503 of the Rehabilitation Act is the affirmative action law that covers individuals' disabilities. Mm-hmm. The Section 503 focused reviews were announced with the corporate scheduling announcement list that came out in March of 2019. There were 500 organizations that were identified that were supposed to go through these focused reviews. Those focused reviews have started now. They're much more going forward in earnest. The last time we did a podcast, we were saying we weren't sure how many were going forward and where they were going forward and what was happening. Well, we now know that they really are going forward in earnest and that they are a major initiative for the agency in all of its regions and offices. A number of things that we're learning from those Section 503 focused reviews. First of all, it's very clear that the focused reviews, when they say they're going to be focused on disability issues, are in fact focused on disability issues. Obvious to say.
Yeah, you'd hope.
But one of the things I think that people were very anxious about is the idea that you have to turn in your executive order affirmative action plan, your affirmative action plan for minorities and females that you're writing under executive order 11246 as part of this process. And people have asked pretty routinely, you know, well, does that mean they're going to be looking through that and they're going to be doing a lot of investigation there? And should I be getting, you know, anxious about the fact that they may go into questions about the disparities that I may have put into my AAP there? And I think the simple answer is that no, OCCP is not really looking at the executive order AAPs. They're really using that as a tool to figure out, you know, did you do a good job with your job groups and do they match what's in the Section 503 AAPs that you dealt with? And to really look at some very basic things and not to do that the kind of in-depth analyses that they would do in other compliance reviews. So that's, I guess, a positive in that sense. The Section 503 focused reviews, there's some things that are coming out that are not surprising. The agency is very much looking at this question about how do you effectively do outreach. They are not happy or excited about the fact that they are finding pretty routinely that there still is an awful lot of outreach that relies on the scattershot approach where you send out things to 90 agencies every time that you have an open position and that you never follow up with any of those 90 agencies. As we've said so often in so many contexts for really the last 5 years now, OACCP is looking for you to do some kind of concerted and focused outreach to really develop relationships with organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an issue that OACCP will cite you for, will force you to do more with. That's really something that's going to continue to be an important part of these focused reviews. OACCP is obviously interested in what they're learning from the utilization analyses. I think that OACCP is learning a couple of things as they go through these focused reviews. One of the things that they are learning, which I think we all kind of knew, but that they are finally discovering, is that there's a real disconnect going on here between the idea that you're doing outreach and you're still not getting candidates back who are self-identifying as individual disabilities, and they're not telling you if they came through the organizations that you did outreach to. So for the for those of you who are doing really effective outreach, you're working with your local division of vocational rehabilitation or with Goodwill or whatever, your applicant tracking system probably is not helping you because it probably doesn't have those particular referral sources listed. And even if it does, there's probably a lot of individuals with disabilities who may have found out about you through those sources who are simply saying for a referral source that they were referred by Indeed or some other place like that. OCCP, I think, really expects that you're going to have all kinds of information about where people come from.
Right.
You don't. Nobody does. You know, candidates, when they go in and they put information in about things like referral source, where they don't really care, it's not important to them, they just pick the first choice and they move on.
Sure.
So, you know, OCCP is learning that they're not getting good information on where people are coming from, and companies are getting frustrated because they're saying we made our outreach efforts and, you know, it's not our fault that we're not getting, you know, this information. I think OCCP is also learning that that there are a lot of people, as again we all knew, who are either applicants or employees that could be considered an individual with disability who don't self-identify.
Right.
OCCP on its website has some videos. There's some other places you can get information about how to bulk up those numbers and get people excited about self-identifying. But this will continue to be an issue through the course of these reviews because people simply don't want to self-identify. That whole thing may get better over time as people get used to the idea they're being asked to self-identify. But today, in this first round of reviews, it really is something of an issue. One of the things I think people have asked about a lot is what's going on with the on-sites. So in a sense here, OCCP has helped us finally because they have listed on their resource site for 503 focused reviews information on the things they'll ask about during an on-site. But when OCCP announced these 503 focused reviews, they said, oh, these on-sites could last, you know, 3, 4, 5 days. We're going to be on-site a lot. We're going to talk to lots of people. We're going to, you know, spend a lot of time looking at your facilities. We're going to spend a lot of time looking at records. We're really going to be able to be there and work with you and go into an in-depth review of what's going on. And it's turned out that OCCP frequently has been on-site for a day.
Really?
Maybe a day and a half. Sometimes less than a day.
Wow.
That's actually, I think, a positive again in terms of what's going on in these reviews.
That's true.
And it's a positive, I think, for everybody concerned because, first of all, you know, for organizations, the last thing you need is some regulatory person on site, as nice as they may be. You know, there's plenty of very nice OCCP compliance officers.
They're the best, honestly.
They are. You know, we hang out on the weekend. I just invite them over to my house. You know, they bring the best snacks. That's, you know, that's the thing that we really like about them. The OCCP side of this, however, is, you know, they want to get some of these reviews closed. You know,
yeah.
They want to make this move forward.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can't do that if you have a 5-day on-site all the time. So I think that they're discovering, you know, one day is probably sufficient to do the interviews and to do the other things they need to do, and then they can move off.
Especially if they're truly focusing on just the one area.
Yes.
Which, again, goes hand in hand with what you talked about earlier.
Yep. And, you know, and really, if you think about it, you know, if we're talking about these 503 focus reviews are supposed to be part of the efficiency pillar that Craig Lean has discussed— a 5-day on-site is not particularly efficient.
No.
Getting that done in a day is a little more efficient. And focused reviews are actually supposed to be a way to more efficiently look at a federal contractor or subcontractor. So the idea that they want to get these things opened, get their on-site done, get them closed, that's important. Those of you who are still on that list, by the way, to have a 503 focused review, I think you should expect to have an on-site. I don't know that that will be something that OCCP will abandon. Of course, we can never tell because the agency, you know, goes back and forth on some of these things. But you should expect the on-site. I think that that's something that will still occur. I have had lots of questions when we talked about focus reviews, by the way, about the focus reviews under VEVRA, the Vietnam era what's that thing called?
It's just Fevra.
Vietnam era I don't know. Wow, this is sad today, Tim. You know, clearly
that's why we stick to the acronyms.
Yeah.
Do you want to try again?
Vietnam era readjustment. This is V E V.
What's that second V?
Vietnam era veterans readjustment. Rehabilitation. I don't know, man.
I'm not helping you because there are too many times you quizzed me on webinars and podcasts and just make me look dumb.
This is bad.
I like seeing you sweat. I'm just gonna sit here like a teacher waiting for that troubled student to get their
I think that makes perfect sense to me. So I looked it up online. It's the Vietnam Era Veterans Readjustment Assistance Act.
You were right there.
You know, I did not, because it's like, this is, you know, I think pretty much, you know, I'm going to go back to drinking my coffee here for a while so I get my act together. The VEVRA focused reviews that were announced in November, I guess it was, of 2019 on Veterans Day or whenever that was, they have not begun yet. I heard yesterday when I was on phone call with some folks that OCCP is thinking they might begin in spring. I do not personally believe that. I think they're not going to get to those until fall at the earliest, simply because OCCP in its corporate scheduling announcement list, there I got that one at least, the CSAL from March of 2019, there was 3,500 separate establishments or entities on that list. Mm-hmm. They have not gotten through that list yet. They are nowhere near through that list. They added 500 focused reviews for VEVRA. That brings that to 4,000. I just can't see that they're going to be able to get to that 500 VEVRA set of reviews until sometime later in the year, unless they jump over some of the other reviews that they have that were already scheduled previously. Once again, you know, I could be totally wrong since I can't actually tell you what VEVRA stands for, so we'll have to see. I do think, however, it's important for those of you who are on that VEVRA CSAL, again, start looking at the things you need to do.
Right.
You know, you have plenty of time to prepare now. So if OCCP sends you a scheduling letter in March or April or June or September, and you have done no concerted outreach and you have not done anything to try to figure out how many protected veterans you have in your organization, and you're not doing any kind of training that you're doing, you will have a serious problem. You know, you've had plenty of time to prepare. So it's really time to jump on this, figure out what we're going to do to make this go forward, and then be ready for when OCCP starts to conduct these focus reviews. So that's where we're at. The 503 focus reviews, they're going forward. They're focusing, I think, on a lot of things that we expected. The on-sites are not lasting as long as we originally told, which is good. And OCCP is learning some things, just as we're all learning some things as this process goes along.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point, though, about the organizations that you know you're on this list. Take advantage of that. This isn't a situation where you're maybe hoping you fly under the radar and you don't get put on a list or you don't get audited, but you know it's coming at some point. So just take care of what you need to take care of. You should be anyway, and we're not saying in any way you're trying to game the system, but you're sort of given a second chance here to take care of all the information and all the processes that you're supposed to. And you know, we obviously hope that you're doing that anyway, but take advantage of the time that you've been afforded with this. Bill, related to Section 503 and individuals with disabilities, of course, talking about the self-ID form. Now, you brought that up as far as, you know, there are challenges with individuals not self-IDing as having a disability, you know, for whatever reason. There are a number of situations where people either intentionally or unintentionally don't put something down. There was a request to tweak some of that last year, and the original seeking comment period was through the beginning of December. But there have been more adjustments to that. There's still been more conversation. I guess where does that all stand as far as the self-ID form and what OFCCP is looking at exactly?
So, Tim, this one's a mess. It's a technical term.
That is
so
fair.
Everybody should take that away. It's a mess. I think that as much as OFCCP is telling you, oh, things are fine, you know, everything's fine, don't look behind the curtain, you know, this is one
there's
where—
there's nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here whatsoever.
Chief,
yeah. You know, it truly is one of those things that OCCP probably needed to get on top of this, you know, somewhere mid-year last year so that they were ready to, if they're going to update their form to do that. Otherwise, if they're just going to get the form reauthorized to do that. Instead, here's where we ended up. In October, OCCP told us, oh, we want to change this self-ID form for disability.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, let's be clear about something. Federal contractors and subcontractors, when you're asking about disability, either at the applicant, new hire stage, with your resurvey, at any time, you have to use that form.
Right.
It is not optional.
Mm-hmm.
And so those of you who have anybody telling you, whether it's your ATS vendor or your HR systems vendor or whatever, that you can do something different, they are wrong. You have got to use that form. It is an absolute requirement. And OCCP loves their little form. You know, they have said on multiple occasions when we've heard them, this form is important to us and you got to use this form. Well, you know, in October, they said, we'd like to revise our happy little form. We'd like to make it easier for everybody to use, and we want to give applicants some more information and employees and other people who might self-ID. You know, we want to make this form easier for them so that potentially organizations can gather better information. So they asked for public comment, and I think that we all sort of assumed that OCCP would get their comments, that they would come out with the final version of the form, and that they would hopefully have the new version of the form ready for the time that the original version of the form expired. And let's talk for a moment of something really boring, which is any time that a regulatory agency is going to collect information from the public—
mm-hmm.
Unless there's really no cost or burden to it, they have to get approval from the Office of Management and Budget
on
using a particular form or approach. So if you look on OACCP's fabulous form that they've been using for a while now, up in the right-hand corner, it has an OMB, Office of Management and Budget, number.
Okay.
And it has an expiration date. And the expiration date that the form has and has had for a while is January 31 of 2020.
Whoops.
So, you know, what we basically figured is that with this proposed version of the form, OCCP would get this all done and that they would get it through OMB and that by January 31 of 2020, they would have a new form already for us and that they would have a new expiration date. Because, frankly, if a form that the government is asking you to complete for any purpose doesn't have a proper expiration date, if the form is expired, you don't have to use it.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter how important the form is. So, oopsie. OCCP came back and said, gosh, you know, your comments were all super helpful. So what we decided here in January is that we are going to come through and we are going to have another version of this fabulous form and we're going to take some more comments. And you can now comment on their second revised version of the form until March 2nd. And to do that, you go out to regulations.gov and you look for OCCP and you look for the form. That's got a little problem, though.
Oh, boy.
Which is the current form still has that January 31, 2020 expiration date on it.
Really?
So what does that mean? Well, you know, technically, you know, when we got to that first couple weeks of February, it basically would have meant that if you didn't want to use the form, you didn't have to because the form is expired. And your applicants and employees could have also said to you, hey, you know I don't have to use this form because it's expired. OCCP, however, has told us this. They have said, look, you know, we are going to get our new form approved soon. In the meantime, we have gotten an extension from OMB so that you can continue to use this form through the end of February. This is not an unusual thing for agencies to do either.
Okay.
To go through this sort of month-by-month process in which they ask for an extension on a current form. And in fact, they have a couple of different things they're doing that with at the moment. One of them is the scheduling letter that you get at the start of a compliance review. OFCCP has some revisions they want to make to that scheduling letter. They have not gotten those approved yet either. So every month, OFCCP goes back to OMB, says we'd like to reapprove the current version for a month while we're waiting for our new version to come out. And OMB gives them a new date, and the new version of the letter has the new date. And then they go back again, you know, 4 weeks later and say, we need another new date. And we have no idea. Literally, we have no idea when the new versions of the scheduling letters might come out, if they ever come out. The disability survey is a little different situation.
Okay.
It seems pretty clear that eventually there will be a new version of that form. We don't know if that'll be in March or April or May or what.
Right.
In the interim, OCCP is telling us that they're getting ongoing renewal of the current form. I'm not sure they're doing a good job at changing the date on the current form. That's a whole separate little issue. But, you know, here's some advice for federal contractors. We know that OCCP loves their form. We know that a new form eventually is going to be coming out. We know that there is a defined way they want you to gather information from applicants and employees. You are probably well served to continue to use the form, even if it's got the wrong expiration date on it, until the new version of the form arrives. But boy, oh boy, you know, this is one where OCCP, I think, a little bit shot itself in the foot.
Okay.
Because if they had simply said, well, you know, let's revise this form and our first set of revisions were sufficient and we'll revise it some more later on and, you know, had gotten that form approved, that would have been super helpful. Because as opposed to having a form that's got a date that's expired on it, it'd be nice to have a form that says, this one is actually approved until, you know, 2023 or 2024 or whatever that would be.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with the saga of the fabulous disability form. For the moment, best advice, continue to use the current form and wait to see when the new form becomes available for you to use. And I'm sure that'll be posted on OCCP's website and on the thousands of blog spots that that all these authors write to tell you, the new form is out.
We all jump on that one.
We love that kind of stuff. It's, you know, again, it's so interesting that it's the first thing we want to talk about after we talk about, you know, who's changed teams at spring training.
Yeah, I'm going to write a blog on a local job network about the Brewers if anyone's interested. I'm not. I'll get in trouble. I've ever cared about getting in trouble before.
But. I just got to ask that. The Houston Astros, what is going to happen with that?
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with that. It's a touchy situation. It's unfortunate. I guess really the Astros are just now the villains of Major League Baseball. I mean, both fans and players. I would expect a lot of internal pitcher versus batter justice, if you catch my drift. Lots of buzzing of the towers for those hitters who clearly were cheating, and it's sad to see. But anyway,
be interesting. I think that'll be one of the most interesting things that goes on.
Yeah.
You know, both in spring and once the season starts, to see what happens and with that.
They're still one of the best teams, so they're gonna be around. And I mean, I guess it will be interesting. Will they be able to hit without all the help?
Yep.
That was our MLB portion of the podcast. And
thank you very much for listening. You know, and tune in to the Bill and Tim Show, where we talk about baseball and in our other lives.
So. I'm not sure the segue that Bill was looking for there with the cheating scandal in OFCCP and the disability form. I'm not really sure we're going with that, but I will say it's kind of nice from OFCCP's point of view that you can have these deadlines and expiration dates and just kind of ignore them, though. Like, yeah. Next month. That will do it next month.
I think it's great.
I will do it next month.
If only we could work have things with the IRS, for example, be like that, where it's like, April 15th, not really a deadline, you know.
Ish.
It's it's a guideline. It's not really.
There you go.
So.
It's not a rule. It's not a law. It's a guideline.
Yeah.
I like that. All right. Well, we have talked about a lot here, and possibly you are listening to a second part of a two-part podcast because of the length of it. But the last topic that we had on the docket here was another mess, if you will, for different reasons, but also the same reasons altogether. EEOC, the EEO 1 survey, component 2. What's going on? I'm just going to throw it out. What's going on with that? Because that's been something we've talked about probably on just about every podcast.
Absolutely.
And had different thoughts on it.
Yep.
And we're now mid-February 2020. So what can you tell us right now?
Yes. So the end of the EVIL Component 2 collection has finally arrived. The district court that has been overseeing the lawsuit that these plaintiffs brought, where they said that EEOC must collect compensation data. The judge who's at that district court is now willing to say that enough data has been collected on pay that we are ready to close this thing out. And even the plaintiffs have said in this particular lawsuit, sure, we're willing to agree with EEOC that enough data has been collected, and that it's time to bring that portion of this particular lawsuit to an end. So on Monday, February 10th, the judge there issued an order that said no one else has to actually provide any additional data. There's enough data in from the employers that we expected to see stuff from that we can consider this to be closed. Now, that doesn't mean this whole thing is done, because there is some back and forth going on currently in terms of whether EEOC has to continue to store this data, how they're going to house it, if any of it's ever going to be available, what will happen if someone has to make it available. But those are, I guess, in a sense, small pieces compared to the burden that this thing turned out to be for employers in terms of actually getting that data into EEOC. EEOC, of course, the agency itself has said that we do not want to go forward with any more Component 2 collection. We think this was a bad idea. And so they have publicly said this is not going to happen anymore. Mm-hmm. We're all done with this. Now that we're finished with this lawsuit and we've really collected all this interesting data, we don't intend to use it for anything, and we don't intend to collect it anymore. And they did that as part of putting through their renewal for collecting the traditional EEO-1 data. All right, so EEOC, at this point, one of the things that we just talked about was the idea that the OSCP's disability form has to go through a renewal process with the Office of Management Budget because it's a collection of information from the public. The EEO-1 survey is the same kind of thing. It has to go through approval every 3 years from OMB to make sure that they have a valid collection number on it and that they are allowed to continue to collect that information. That has never been a problem in the past. EEOC has typically come through plenty early to make sure that every time the renewal needs to come up for the data collection portion of the EEO-1, at least that traditional data portion, that has been approved quickly by OMB and that everybody moves on and everybody continues to provide that demographic data that they've always provided. This, of course, would be the year that EEOC, didn't quite get on top of the ball fast enough. So because of all of the data collection going on with Component 2, and because EEOC wanted to make it clear that they were never, ever, 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 ever going to collect Component 2 again, when they went through the process of putting something out at regulations.gov about renewing this collection, they did two things. They said, we're not going to do Component 2, but we're going to do Component 1. And that was all great. And so OMB is currently in the process of looking at things, and EEOC has had their fabulous regular part of the EEO-1, Component 1, that they're looking to do. Unfortunately, we got a timing issue going on, however, because in the last number of years, what's happened is that EEO-1 Component 1 data has been collected in the first quarter of a calendar year.
Right.
Now, the data being collected is for the fourth quarter of the previous year. So it's been confusing that way because, you know, for example, during 2019, in the first quarter of the year, they were collecting data on the fourth quarter of 2018. Here in 2020, during the first quarter of 2020, they should have been collecting data, and that portal should already be open for the EO1 to collect data on the fourth quarter of 2019. But because they didn't get their renewal in on time, we are still waiting for the Office of Management and Budget to renew EOC's ability to collect the Component 1 data. And this really has nothing to do with Component 2. It simply has to do with the fact that EEOC needed to start that process earlier and make sure that they had the right to collect Component 1 data. And we're still waiting. As of today, you know, that thing is still sort of sitting around, and we're not quite sure when EEO1 will open up the survey portal and begin the collection of that traditional data that goes into the EEO1 survey. You would think that, that between EEOC and OMB, they would get this to run forward fairly quickly. But I suspect that a lot of the comments that they received when they put this out and said, we're never, ever going to do Component 2 again, has probably delayed this to some extent.
Right.
And it's possible that the late date has delayed it. And then I think just generally things at OMB are moving very, very slowly. So bottom line, currently, the EEO1 portal for collecting data for the EEO1 survey is not open, even though it should have been open by now. And we're all still in wait-and-see mode. No one's sure when that portal is going to open. We're quite sure that EEOC will, in fact, collect that Component 1 data at some point. We don't know what that point is. We don't know if, for some, if whether or not, you know, EEOC might decide to collect data on some period other than the fourth quarter of the previous year. We don't know if there's going to be some kind of change. We're not quite sure what's going on. You know, I can speculate in all kinds of ways about what may happen. I think in this case, I'm not going to. I'm simply going to say,
what?
Keep. I know it's bad.
What? That's what we do here. That's what you do.
It's so fun. Well, okay. So
what happened to the scoreboard?
I'm going to speculate on something in just a moment here. So I'm a bad man. So EEOC, I think, you know, is going to collect this information. What you want to do, and this I think is important, is continue to watch the EEOC.gov website and see when they actually do open up the portal for collection of the traditional EEO1 Component 1 data. Lurking, I think, in the background, and this is something that EEOC has finally started to think about, and I don't know that it affects actually this year's survey as much as it's just one more interesting wrinkle in things. Mm-hmm. EEOC appears to finally be recognizing the idea that we have an issue with even the traditional collection of data, and that issue would involve the idea that we have more and more employees who are self-identifying as non-binary. That we have people who don't want to say I'm male or female.
Sure.
They want to be in some other category. And EEOC simply doesn't know what to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
So they are giving that some thought. They're collecting information. They're trying to figure that out. That's, I think, also causing some consternation within the agency. I would think that sometime, if not this year, then next year, they're going to have to put out some kind of proposal as to how they're going to deal with that. I don't think that's delaying the current EEO1 survey. I don't think they're anywhere near ready to collect that information. But we'll see what that means for next year. That may change the whole dynamic in terms of what you have to provide. It may also change the timing in terms of when they collect that information.
Hmm.
One last thought about Component 2. We know that the folks in the Trump administration were very adamant through OMB that Component 2 was a terrible idea, as was EEOC, frankly, the Republican members of the commission. Don't forget, we have an election coming up. So, you know, as of January of 2021, if we have a Democratic administration and they put enough people on EEOC so that there's three Democrats sitting on the commission, there is nothing to stop them from saying, oh, just kidding about that last thing telling about no more Component 2.
Oh,
we actually love Component 2. Oh. It's fantastic, and we're going to go right back to it. So Component 2 is currently dead, but it's kind of, you know, vampire dead at the moment. You know, it's lying in its coffin, and it's waiting to for the darkness to fall. And I don't know that anyone's driven a stake through it in any kind of sufficient way. So it could raise its ugly head again. We'll all kind of hope not, because no one thinks that that Component 2 collection really did anything constructive. But, you know, fun things happen, and we'll see whether Component 2 comes back and rises from the dead.
And I was going to say,
with its ugly cape, and
it's not even a commentary on political sides at all. It's just, can we leave it alone, please? Like, I don't care, Republican, Democratic. Just leave Component 2. It's done. Let it be dead. Let it rest in peace. Because as you said, everybody who's actually involved and talks about this, they hate it. They think it's dumb. It's not going to be effective. And let's just. Just kill it.
Yes. Component 2 was always a political thing. It was never a data collection thing. The anyone who's looked at the data you get out of Component 2 will tell you with absolute certainty that the data is valueless.
We need to come together as a country and make sure Component 2 stays dead. That's all I'm saying. That's the campaign I'm running on.
Right. Amen. I'm voting for you, baby.
Yes.
You know, Tim Yuma, you know, as soon as he starts, you know, running for office, we're all going to have to jump on that bandwagon. And he's going to be a busy guy, because he's going to have this podcast, the political campaign, and of course, then the baseball podcast we're starting. So
yeah, I need to get on that.
It's a busy spring for us.
Well, Bill, busy is definitely the operative word here. Tons of stuff that we went through today. And for obvious reasons, partly because of all the movement, partly because, unfortunately, we haven't been able to connect a lot with these podcasts. But, you know, just thank you for coming in and really blasting through a bunch of this. I mean, lots of different information, but also kind of, you know, different areas as far as, like, we talked about personnel at the beginning, or talking about forms, or talking about, of course, EEOC and EEO1 and the focus review. So, Bill, as always, thank you for taking the time to do all this and putting your neck out there a little bit with some of your projections, if you will. I did mark down all of your thoughts, and we'll make sure that we have a
scoreboard
update for
everybody. Looking forward to the scoreboard. Yeah. It's going to be fun. Tim, of course, it's always a pleasure to be here with you. You know, I wish everybody that I talk to asks questions as good as the ones you have. And
wow.
And, you know, we will just look forward to our next podcast, which we'll try to do sometime before summer, I hope. Yeah. So
maybe I should try to bring another guest on, but then I feel like I'm cheating on Bill. So I guess we'll see what's happening. We'll see what's happening. I guess we'll wrap things up there before it gets a little too awkward in here. Once again, Bill Ostendorf, founder and president of HR Analytical Services, and, of course, a regular contributor for Local Job Network for, you know, the better part of a couple decades, three decades, however long we've even existed, Bill was already there helping us out. So, Bill, appreciate it as always. And for everyone here at Local Job Network, you have been listening to the OFCCP Compliance Podcast. I'm Tim Yuma. We'll talk to you next time.